This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money, live from downtown Las Vegas. It is Bar Canada at the D. It is our first Friday of NFL games to talk about, so let's get right into it. Amal Shaw is here. So pleased to be joined on the desk in studio by professional NFL handicapper Steve Fezzik. You just heard him on the Gil Alexander Megapod, which just came out, and I felt kind of honored, also sort of insulted, which is a great combo, that Steve came on, name-dropped me after my historic upset loss in tennis to the great Todd Wishnev. So I'm glad that that was still in front of your mind, Steve, over a year later, which I'm kind of honored at that you would be thinking of me. So thank you.
Buster Douglas only paid 40-1 when he beat Mike Tyson. Yeah. And there were people that purportedly cashed with 110-1 when Todd Wishnev played so far above his normal level that his nose will bleed for a year.
Pretty much.
Were you using like a frying pan like Andy Roddick?
Well, it was, all right, I won the first set 6-0, and admittedly, I basically pulled a Texas Tech, you know? Took my foot off the gas. I was like, all right. Todd kept saying, well, that was a close 6-0. It was a close 6-0. It was not a close 6-0, but to his credit, he won the next set.
So. I tell my son, if you win 6-0, I said, you know what? Go ahead and try, experiment a little bit. Don't be beating anybody bagel. Let them have a couple games. You'll be fine. They'll build character. I'm sure something similar happened.
I like that. I wasn't expecting that, Steve. That's pretty good.
Okay. Look at Steve Fezzik giving out tennis advice. We're going to give out a lot of NFL advice. I want to start, though, just from a power ratings perspective from last night. I told them all, I found it ridiculous as we got closer and closer to kickoff. I understood the loss of Chris Jones and Travis Kelce were massive for Kansas City, but were we really in a position to believe the Chiefs on a neutral field were giving a however you value the home field for Arrowhead, 2 or 1.5 point favorites on a neutral against Detroit? Because I thought that was insane. I bet Chiefs money line at -195. Obviously, I live to lose that bet, but I the right thing to do. And now we come out of that and go, is there an overreaction to be made? Or is that really real where we're at between the difference between the two teams?
Yeah, it gets difficult when you get multiple stars out, right? So you look at a power rating. I don't think I'm on an island here with these guys healthy. Kansas City's about a 6. They're about 6 points better than average team. That's pretty much start of the year where the best team in the NFL is. And Detroit got 1.5 points better. I think I'm not on an island there. So I've got KC 4.5 better on a neutral. Well, then we take one off for Kelce. We take one off for Jones. And then we've got to start to think to ourselves, but maybe these guys, maybe they'd be worth the point on some other team, but boy, are they really important for this team. And we really saw it, that wide receiver crew. Mahomes played out of his mind. Mahomes is God.
Really
and,
is.
And 4th and 25, no problem. I'll just throw it out there, and Todd Wish never would have caught that ball, but not their receivers.
You know, Steve, I'm so glad you brought that point up. We were talking about the drop by Sky Moore earlier. Kadarius Toney on that same drive on 1st down and 10. It is unbelievable the throws that this guy makes. I remember Dustin and I were watching the game together in the first half. There was a throw. We thought the ball was intercepted, and it was actually caught. I don't remember who it was. There was another throw of Valdez-Scantling. Ben, I was actually surprised he caught the ball because I have yet to see him actually consistently catch the ball. I mean, it's usually alleged that he caught it. I mean, when you look at these receivers, they're trying to try the Patriot system. We're like, hey, we're just going to plug guys in with Brady and we're going to go.
Yeah, and I think this is power rating wise. I think we're in agreement here, Ben. We're not going to upgrade Detroit much. We're not going to, I mean, we're going to certainly bump them maybe half a point. So we'll make them a 2. But Kansas City, clearly, we got to bring them down. With both these guys still hurt, you know, I actually recommended playing Jacksonville week 2 on Gil's Megapod, I believe, or maybe it was on the show, but Jacksonville was catching 3 at home against Kansas City. They're not going to be catching 3 anymore, even if one of these guys comes back. But Kansas City, maybe we lower them to 3.5 points better than average team. That'd probably be where I'll go with them if they're missing these guys.
For the books, by the way, that do the look aheads, it has been adjusted. Chiefs now laying 2.5 on the road in Jacksonville. So you've got the point already. And that's where it'll become interesting. You know, we start as we begin in week 2, and I realize we haven't even gotten to week 1 yet, but just from, you know, you're always looking forward. And it's like, how do you now factor in the cluster injuries, especially to stars like you have in Kansas City, along with now situational spots that come up where you have a Chiefs team off the first ever loss in the Mahomes era when the defense allows 14 points or less and with extra rest. That's where it now, I think, will become very tricky for a lot of bettors going forward.
Because now the spot arguably is good for Kansas City. Off of the loss, do you really want to fade them? Well, the numbers, the power ratings are going to say yes, but I don't think we're going to expect Kansas City to start 1-5 this year. So
probably fair.
I would agree with you guys. I think this 2.5 is a good take on Kansas City here. 3 additional days of rest. Jaguars in a division game against the Colts. We'll see what happens there. I would expect them to eke out a win. I don't know if they cover it. I wouldn't want to lay that number on the road with the Jacksonville Jaguars. But overall, guys, if you look at the game, there were And I hate to say this, because in the NFL, there's about four plays that determine the entire game. But these are catches that, I mean, you feel like 90% of the receivers in the National Football League would have made. This team, these guys couldn't catch a cold standing on the Arctic Circle.
Well, in the pick six, I mean, a dropped pick six, so that's an 8-point, 9-point swing on one play. The when I looked at the box scores, I was actually shocked because I said, oh, I'm going to look at this box score and the Chiefs are going to, have dominated. And they didn't. You know, the box score said it's a pretty close game, all in all, which surprised me. But obviously, you add in all the yardage that got dropped by these receivers. And Kansas City, I would say, if they had, it's interesting. If I always do this, what's getting our time machine? Go back and play again. You know what? Yeah, I guess Kansas City's still going to be a 3.5-point favorite. You know, I don't think we go to 3. Maybe we do. Maybe we say KC 3, but 4.5, 5, too high.
For sure. Well, and you look at the thing we talked about in the first hour, something that is very hard to quantify within the actual power rating number if you're doing the handicap here, and it's a head coach in Dan Campbell that is he is all over the place when it comes to the comments, the in-game decision-making. There were some good, there were some bad. Where do you go with him when you're looking to make a line, and he's still a young coach, relatively speaking, to a lot of other guys, has made great decisions, but also makes some head-scratching ones as well every game pretty much.
Yeah, well, I liked how aggressive he was in general. I like aggression. It was interesting. I didn't have a problem with the 4th and 25. I don't think it was the right call, but it wasn't a horribly wrong call with Mahomes. There was one person on Twitter, and I'm sorry I'm not attributing it to him, but it's actually brilliant. He said, the optimal play was for Kansas City on 4th and 25 to run backwards to their own 9-yard line, well, their own 10, and go out of bounds. And the reason being because then they're down one.
Right.
They still have their timeouts. Detroit can't get a first down. They're probably not going to get in the end zone. They're going to kick a field goal, and Mahomes is going to be down 4 with the ball. It's a lot easier for Detroit to get a first down from the KC 30 than from the KC 10.
That's an excellent point. However, if Sky Moore could actually catch the football, we're not even having this conversation.
No doubt.
I mean, that ball, I could not have gone there and handed the football to him any better. And the ball was right on the yard marker. So with his momentum, he would have fallen forward, would have had the first down regardless. But I tell you what, the one thing that does concern me a little bit with Detroit, they get stopped. I don't know where you come out. I was not thrilled with the decision to go for the fake punt on 4th and 2. I thought it was an unnecessary gamble too early in the game.
I'm fine with, but even though if it's mathematically wrong, I love fake punts and fake field goals. And here's why I'm all, even if on that one play, it's wrong and the risk reward doesn't justify it. I like directionally, hey, we're the underdog. So let's make the game more volatile, more variance. And also now every team you play the rest of the year has to say, oh, they could, this crazy man could fake a punt from his own 12-yard line.
Great rebuttal. I like that point you made. And that is, I'd rather have my offense try and execute it. I always, whenever teams want to run fakes, to me, it's an indictment of your offense. Mm. You really believe that your special teams is better at executing your play. I get the element of surprise and fake, but if it was a yard or half a yard, I'd be much more apt to do it. 2 yards sometimes. It was like that play Gibbs had earlier in the game. He was going to score on that handoff, and he blows a tire. And my point is, if somebody ends up slipping or falling, it didn't happen. They end up scoring a touchdown on the drive. Detroit had 2 touchdown drives and a pick six. So there's still some concern with this offense that looked like they were really able to move the ball effectively against this Chiefs run defense. You only put up 2 scoring drives. One included a stop where you had to go for it on 4th down and you're inside your own 20. I don't think we should be planning the ticker tape parade right now in the state of Michigan just yet.
I agree. And like I said, only a 0.5-point upgrade on the power rating. And Lou Holtz said this when Notre Dame beat Miami and Miami tried, a trick play. He's like, they don't think they can beat us straight up. They got to use trickery against us. And so the one team's like, boy, our coach really doesn't believe in us. We have to try this. So there is that locker room aspect, the mental aspect of the game and confidence.
To Steve's point, that was the one thing I thought, Ben. I was like, man, this sounded like an era of desperation. I'll go back to a bad loss Ohio State had against Florida in the national championship game in the Fiesta Bowl. They went for it on 4th and 1 at their own 29-yard line, down by 14 points or whatever, 21 points. Yeah. I go, right there, you're telling your team you can't stop the other guy. That was my only feeling on that.
But I still would agree with it, because a team that's down 14 in that situation, more than likely, you can't tell me they're not going to be faced with a 4th and 9 later in the game that they're going to need to convert. So if you're going to have to face a 4th and 9 down the road, you may as well go for it 4th and 1.
I would just love to see a team on a national spotlight game as well do the run backwards on 4th and 25, just to see the entire internet explode. Even though the point that you were citing on Twitter, very, very good. I would just love to see it actually play out and watch the announcers have zero idea of how to interpret it, because there are so many things. If you go and listen to the Megapod, you guys talked about a number of scenarios that are now starting to be more mathematically accepted, but we're still kind of a ways away from coaches actually adopting it, and you kind of wonder when does the pendulum swing to that side?
To summarize, the word is out. Everyone knows you're down 14 late in the game and you score a touchdown. I mean, sharp fifth grader knows you go for two. You know, I mean, literally, my son, that's obvious, Daddy. You know, to the decision tree, you win 62.5% of the time instead of 50% if the teams are equal. And yet, all the time, the announcers, not in the country is aware of this. They're like, wow, they're going for two down eight, huh?
I want to address a couple of things. First of all, to get that job, you have to have a stupidity in football. You can't be smart about it. I mean, it's unbelievable how many times. You know how many times Mike Tirico is wrong on the math? He's like, well, if they had not gone for two there, I'm like, buddy, there'd be a two-point differential. Are you not able to do the math? It's unbelievable how inept they are when it comes to that aspect of it. The other thing is, though, in reference to that, how come nobody's blaming Aaron Glenn on that 4th and 25? Pass rush four, maybe a fifth guy if you want. Why are you not? Your defense should have seven guys 15 yards off the line of scrimmage or further back. How is it that the ball drops in over two defenders? Can you explain to me on a 4th and 25, a 4th and a quarter of the football field, how you allow that to happen?
It was shades of Ed Donatel, 4th and 26, the Freddie Mitchell catch in Philadelphia.
If you want to catch a 60-yard bomb, all right, you know, my quarterback falls down, whatever, my safety falls down, but you are not going to complete a 26-yard pass on 4th and 25. And you know what? If you can do a hook and lateral and somehow get it, that's fine too. But that's unacceptable that a guy. It's what do you think he's going to throw? A 26-yard pass?
No, that's exactly right. And to Steve's point, Ben, how is it that the defense wasn't, their depth wasn't enough? The ball should not fall right over, right at the line, the yard line to gain.
So many questions, like so many specific things. You say what? Four plays a game can decide an outcome. You could make the argument last night there were about a half dozen that completely flipped the game one way or another. But we're not here to look back. We're here to move on. We'll talk about some mistakes bettors might be making in general in Week 1 with Steve Fezzik when we come back. Dive into the whole NFL Week 1 card on the other side right here on VSiN Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with the GBank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the GBank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. GBank Visa is a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere and works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/VSIN. We're joined once again. It is Sharp Money by Steve Fezzik, professional handicapper. You follow at Fezzik Sports, talking all things NFL Week 1. We are about to break down the full card, Steve. But first, like a lot of bettors, they've been waiting all summer for this opportunity, this moment. Maybe they've been ignoring the lines. Just now they're pulling up their sports books and seeing what's on offer. What are some of the mistakes you see bettors do, especially Week 1 specifically? We start a new year, guns blazing, ready to empty the clip on the bankroll that maybe can be avoided if folks are tuning in right now.
So you correctly introduced me as a professional handicapper, but really I'm a professional bettor, first and foremost. I'm a math geek. I'm much better, Ben, when you tell me who you like and I tell you how to bet it, all right? Because it's really different skill sets. And one of the biggest mistakes I see, the teasers. People want to play teasers. Teasers are getting unplayable. So at DraftKings, you can still lay minus $1.20 on the 6-point teaser. That's really good right now. So that's, I believe that to be very beatable if you're doing the long teasers through the 2, through the 6. But other places like Circa, like South Point, now are charging minus $1.30. God can't win. Playing a 6-point teaser long term, minus $1.30. I won't bore you with the math. Go read Stanford Wong, my friend's book, Sharp Sports Betting. He'll explain why. But what's worse is some people will tease 5.5-point favorites. So they'll tease things like the Vikings or Seattle or Jacksonville this week. So think about that. That's essentially you're betting that team to win. And what the math is, it's two legs of a teaser. And the first leg, you're essentially, I know you don't think you're laying minus 280, but you are. Trust me. That's what the math works out to be. Why lay minus 280 on Minnesota to win? Just play them on the money line, minus 235. So think about that. You're paying 45 extra cents to say teaser when you walk to the window than to play money line, and it's an identical bet. They've got to win the game.
Yeah, Ben, Steve brings up a great point, especially when you get some of these numbers and you use Minnesota and Jacksonville as examples. if you see the money line, and if you were to parlay those two together on the money line, sometimes the number will come out more favorable than the teaser number of minus 120 or let's say 130 even, for example. So take that into consideration when you're looking at that. That's going to be crucial.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I was talking about last night where it's also just, you know, being able to line shop and compare, all right, where is the number? And, I've, you know, with the way the Kansas City number went, it got way, way below where I think most people would still even consider teasing.
Sure.
Down to basically four close. But that could still be an example where I looked at them last night, threw them in a two-teamer with Baltimore money line, where Circa was 75% cent below the market on Baltimore. They were about 15 cents below market on Kansas City. And you're getting minus 115 on a two-teamer. I wonder for, you know, a lot of bettors, they probably don't even, I don't know how many people think that way, where they're like, well, let me just kind of shop around and see where I can get on these two teams, instead of just, well, now I'm so glued to the teaser because it's been hammered in our minds over the last couple of NFL seasons. That's just how you have to bet.
And it's fine to tease stuff like Baltimore. When Baltimore's 10, all right, they put the kibosh on the teaser. I can't tease it down to below three. You can't tease to three. You got to tease below three. But now Baltimore's 9.5 and nine in some spots. Opportunity. Obviously, we're not going to tease it to three. We're going to get it down below. If we have to use a 6.5-point teaser or even a 7-point teaser, you bring it down below that three, and Baltimore suddenly becomes a very attractive teaser. Well, I need things to tease it with, but there's a plethora of long teasers on the dogs, including the Cleveland Browns against the Bengals. You get them up and above seven. One thing about these teasers, I tell you what, I don't really want to tease a 1.5 to a 7.5. I want to get it to 8.5 because we talked about the prevalence of the 8 landing more often in the NFL. That's becoming a more important number. I'm going to feel a lot safer getting 8.5 than getting 7.5.
And to Steve's point, think about this in the Kansas City game. Had the Chiefs scored a go-ahead touchdown, let's say they convert that Sky Moore play. Instead of getting a field goal, they get a touchdown. It's going to be on 5, which is the crucial number. They're going to go for 2. Now, we would have never said 5 is a crucial number in the past, but they would have gone for 2, and if they miss it, you could potentially wind up with a game landing on 5. So Steve brings up a great point with this being a little bit different situation than they have been in the past. Steve, real quick, I wanted to get your take on a lot of people will bet recreationally just for entertainment purposes. Where do you come out on that in terms of how people approach that? I have a very strong opinion on that, and I just want to get your thoughts on it.
I actually think this would be controversial. And I'm trying to be a gentler, kinder Fezzik here in 2023.
Wait, hold on a second. I object because I think you're one of the nicest people off air. I don't know about the Twitter or X, whatever. I'm never on there. But I'm saying in person, you're a very nice person.
There's like in the movie Gung Ho, like the children are completely misbehaving when his boss comes over and he goes, "That is neighbor's child." You know, like my children wouldn't be that way. I wouldn't be that way. But as far as recreational betting, I think it's fine. Like, think about it. You bet $100, you throw a dart, bet on a team. How much does that cost you? I can't believe I blew $100 on the Chiefs. You didn't. You blew $4.54. That's the theoretical hold. Think about the entertainment value. You go bowling, it costs you $8 a game, right? You go golfing, it's going to cost you $125 for a round. You'd spend $4.50 and get a drink ticket or two to have 3 hours of entertainment. It's fine.
Explain to people how you come up with the 454 on that, because they're still putting $100 on the bet. And if maybe people, let's say they for the NFL season, they got $500 to bet with. They've lost 20% of what they're going to potentially bet or whatever the amount may be. Just kind of expand upon that because you're a numbers-based guy.
Yeah, so week one, you bet 110 to win 100, and you lose. And you lose 110. The next week, you bet 110 to win 100. You win that week.
Okay.
So you're wagering $220 in that case. You're going to lose 10 in the long run, going 1-1. So for every 220 you wager, you lose 10. In this case, I risk 100. So it's a little... you're losing $5 a week. You'll be fine.
not necessarily gonna break the bank on that one. I think the other thing too, we talk about, you know, for recreational bettors, I mean, regardless of your bet type, you're wanting to get all the information you can, getting the best of the number. Those are very basic betting principles. But when we've looked at, you know, week one is almost it's an individual animal because lines have been out since May essentially. So I wonder how you look at that, where, you know, bettors might come in now. And I mean, I think a lot of us can be thinking the same way if we aren't betting in May. Let's say you come in and there are certain games that have moved a point and a half since summer, but we still like where they're at. And if this was maybe week six and we'd missed out on the best of the number, we might go, all right, that's a stay away. I almost look at it differently for week one because of the majority and the length of time these numbers have been up. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, so there's some art as well as science. You know, the bottom line is, for whatever reason, I'm not sure I can explain it, dogs have barked so hard. If you go back to the year 2000 and you blindly bet every underdog, you actually made money. It's 53%. And there are some subsets that are much stronger than that. Now, it turns out the divisional dogs are the ones that really have driven this train, especially the home divisional underdogs. So in general, I'm looking to play dogs. So this week, I like Washington Commanders. I think Arizona is going to be atrocious. But I think that line will go even higher. So if you want to lock it in, lay the 7 right now. By the way, I have unconfirmed reports that every single person in Survivor is indeed going to take Washington. It's going to be a,
unanimous
9,000 player chop if they go ahead and lose in week one. But I do think it is certainly the optimal play, because when are you ever going to want to play Washington? But other than Washington as a favorite, I got to tell you, I would look towards every underdog except for the Texans at less than 10. I won't play the Texans less than 10, but every other underdog, it's on my radar screen to play right now.
I'm not going to ask you this question in subsequent weeks, so I'm only going to ask you because it's week one. I don't know if you're involved in Survivor or not. If you are, or even if you're not, who would you play in week one and what would you give it as a pick? And to me, the big thing is, look, people are like, well, everyone's going to be on Washington. Here's the thing. You're not going to win this thing in week one. But you got to survive in advance. This is the NCAA tournament for 20 weeks.
It's like you're the U.S. Open, right? And it's the hardest par 4. And it's like, well, maybe we don't need to birdie this one. We can go ahead and take the par. But Washington's a slam dunk, and here's why. Because optimal strategy, obviously Baltimore is more likely to win, but then you've blown Baltimore out of your range to play the rest of the contest, and you're not going to want – Washington will not be a 7-point favorite the rest of the year. So use them here. Now, if everyone played optimally, then I couldn't use it. But you know what? People don't play optimally. There's going to be some people last night that took the Lions, by example, to win. I mean, people will play underdogs in Survivor, and I just, without going through the math, I strongly disagree with that strategy. They'll play both sides of a game. I strongly disagree with that crazy option. But there'll be plenty of people playing plenty of other things. Yeah. Will 50% of the field play Washington? I would think, really, 80% should play them. But if I said over-under, how many people will play them? I'll go 55%. You go over-under.
I'm going to go under.
I think we get like 60 end up going Washington.
I think it's prudent. I agree with Steve. I'll tell you right now, and I told Dustin this, I'm not going to discuss this afterwards. I'm taking Washington. If they lose, they lose. I don't care. But it's the right play in week one, because the point Steve made, and this is very important in Survivor or any contest you're involved that's similar to this, where you can't use a team twice, there is not a single spot in the rest of the schedule with Washington where you can use them.
Yes, sure. And Ben, to answer your question, I am in Survivor. I just entered 3. I max bet my entries into Millions. Millions has the overlay, and this shows how bettors are not logical. Bettors want to have fun, and actually this is logical because it's not about making money. It's about having fun, and Survivor is a lot of fun. You know why? You're playing in a poker tournament. You're a chip leader. Yeah. That is fun. And every single person in Survivor, each and every week you remain alive, is indeed the chip leader. Okay, maybe their path is more difficult. But contrast that with being in the Millions. I've talked to Gil about this. You go 3-2 in Millions, you have negative equity. You'd rather have not played. You're like, how can that be? I'm at 60%. Because you're busted on the quarterly prize. You can't even win that anymore. And your chance of winning it all has gone down despite hitting 60%.
Sure. Did you enter Survivor only after the Chiefs win or the Chiefs loss last night?
Yes. If the Chiefs had won, I would not have even entered because some people would be 1-0 already against me.
It's a great point. I have a buddy who had all 10 entries on Kansas City. And voila, now he's...
Wait a minute.
Overlay.
You bury the lead?
Overlay.
What? Yeah.
Was it at the Circus Survivor?
He's going to rebuy. He's just going to rebuy.
He has the bankroll to do it. It's not me. I'm not that guy. I don't have it. We'll dive into all these specific NFL games, line movement galore next with Steve here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Nobody knows football like VSIN, and now's the time to become a VSIN Pro subscriber. Only VSIN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for college and pro games every week. Our picks page recapping all the best bets from guests and hosts throughout the day are in one convenient place, and this season we have a top VSIN experts leaderboard to see which VSIN expert has the hot hand, and our betting splits let you know where the money and bets are moving for every game. The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings betting data every 5 minutes. So you can see changes in all the action. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Pleasure for us having Steve Fezzik in studio for one more segment here, Professional Better. You follow at Steve Fezzik, and we're getting into some of these specific games, Steve, you're targeting here. Week one, very unique week relative to the next 17 we'll see in the NFL season. A whole lot of divisional games with injury implications here. Want to start in Cleveland, where Denzel Ward, the cornerback, cleared from concussion protocol today. Joe Burrow set to make his return at QB, and we are seeing the market. This is probably the one game, Steve. This is teeter-totter the most all summer based on the Burrow training camp calf strain, some of the inclinations on maybe cluster injuries for Cleveland in the secondary, but Doesn't seem like that is actually going to materialize. So where do you stand now that we're pretty much at 2 market-wide?
Yeah, so it was 2.7 at one point, and a couple threes did pop, and I got a little taste of Cleveland, and then down to 1 with the questions about Burrow, and now Burrow's going to play, and we're back to 2. I got to tell you, Ben, I don't think I'm going to get that +3 on the Brownies. I don't think I'm going to need the +3. You know, the great thing about, you know, when you're a pro bettor, sometimes you're not disappointed when you miss out on the 3. You know why? Because then you get 8.5. Because then you can tease. And basic strategy, when a spread is like 2.5, never, ever, ever bet a Y. Asymmetric risk. If I can get a 3, it's a disaster to take a 2.5. So I just wait it out until I'm absolutely certain that I'm not going to get it. And if I want to bet it plus the 2.5 and I miss it and I get 2 or 1.5, who cares? It's unlikely to land 2. And I can still tease it up to the +8. So I'll be teasing Cleveland if I don't get the 3, which I don't think I'm going to get. And it's looking less and less likely, but I go back to that Halloween where the Browns just go ahead and trounced them. I go back to last year when Burrow had the appendicitis and wasn't good in September. I go back to the underlying numbers for the Bengals, 5.4 yards per play on offense and defense last year. I'd kind of be surprised, actually, if the Browns don't win. This might, well, at +3, this would be my biggest bet of the week. I'll still wager on them +2.
Yeah, I think the Browns are a team that, Ben, people are overlooking. The talent is there. The offensive line is almost as good as anybody in football. Tremendous running back in Nick Chubb. You've got Deshaun Watson, who a couple of years ago was one of the upper echelon quarterbacks in the NFL. Let's see if he can return to that status. If he can do that with his mobility, I think it puts a lot of pressure, as Steve alluded to, on that Cincinnati defense. Hendrickson and Hubbard are going to have to get home at some point in time. If they don't, this could be a long day for that Cincinnati secondary.
Sure. At 2 right now, most of the market, circa Westgate, a couple books, if you paid attention to the books here in Nevada, now down to 1.5. It'll be interesting to see where that goes, because, I mean, and that's why I'd say for now, like, you could easily see public bettors come in. Oh, Cincinnati, very popular team to make a big run. Joe Burrow just got paid. We're getting under a field goal. I don't know. We're probably not going to get 3, but at least, you know, 2.5 to a teaser through 3, and 3 and 8 is definitely possible.
To quote my one of my favorite movies, Wall Street of the 80s. So, like, I don't know what to make of it, Gordon. Like, the public loves Cincinnati, but the spread is dropping. It's like, I'll tell you what to make of it. Your union buddies are talking, and they're talking about how Cleveland's the right side. I do think Circa, with the highest limits in town, is the leading indicator, and they're telling you you're not getting 3, and you may not be getting 2 come Sunday.
Probably greed is good.
An Amal Shaw line, if there ever was.
Greed is right there.
Another divisional game where we've seen some injury throughout the week. Green Bay, we're now seeing the market go back against the Packers. This is a spot where Christian Watson officially ruled out the wide receiver today by his head coach, Matt LaFleur, and second wide receiver option, Romeo Dobbs, is questionable at this point. Look, pros have been all over the Packers since the summer when they were catching 3 from Chicago. How much realistically do you view the Watson loss here for Green Bay? And how much of that even factored into your handicap in the first place as someone who likes the Packers?
Well, I liked the Packers is the problem, because I'm one of those that was betting the Packers with both fists during the summer. And then the Bears O-line got all their cluster injuries, and most of these guys are playing, but they had to shuffle their guys around. None of them really moved the needle, but boom. That was really important, and I loaded up on the Packers. I knew it was going to come down, took the +2.5, even the +2, teased them. But now the Packers have their own problems, because now they have their unproven quarterback without any weapons, and neither one of these guys really moves the needle at all. But when they're both hurt, that's a big problem. You know, I think the sharpest move here has been on the total, because if the Bears have a bad O-line that's compromised and the Packers have no playmakers, how are we going to score here? And so I agree with the move, big move on the under.
Ben, you liked it. You like your Packers here, and Steve's on the same side there. This line continues to drop down. I have a feeling by kickoff, depending on how people view the wide receiver injuries, this could be a pick'em.
Yeah, I would have made Packers favored. Now I'm not so confident with the wide receiver issues.
Sure. My hesitation, I talked about it earlier in the show, it's just Green Bay's second worst rush defense a season ago. It is one of the couple of rushing quarterbacks they will face in Justin Fields. So how does that matchup actually play out? We're going to find out 4:25 Eastern there on Sunday. A couple of games where I look at some of these line moves and I find myself a little bit confused here. So you, as the pro, can lay it out for us. Philadelphia and New England, a lot of respected love for the Patriots, taking this game down now to pretty much 4 market wide. But it's been established that offensive line injuries, especially when it is a cluster and a whole group is really, really limited, has a huge impact on the point spread in general, even if the individual parts don't. So with this Patriot offensive line in complete shambles, why are the bettors still taking the Pats here down from 4.5, 5, now down to 4 market wide?
Super Bowl hangover. It's real. Eagles had a cupcake schedule last year. They were a really solid team, and I had them rated the same as Kansas City end of the year. They lose 5 guys on the defense in the middle. You figure that Belichick has a long history of mucking up games like this, where he might lose 19-20. I'm on the under in this game. You know, I just read some of Billy Walter's book, and like that's one of the things he shows. You know, Super Bowl loser week one, and you know, and in September, good spot to bet against. Not that that book is gospel or anything, but I mean, it is a factor that I'm not rushing to bet underdogs week one, and I'm certainly not rushing to bet the Super Bowl hangover team. I could see, you know, New England hanging in there, losing by three.
Like you're calling the under here, I think that the Patriots are going to be in this game and win this game. It's going to have to be Ramondre Stevenson on the ground, Mac Jones with some opportunities when they present themselves. But I like the play here under 45, and you mentioned it. I think they're going to be able to attack this running game. They lose Hargrave, who goes to San Francisco on that defensive front. That's going to be a big blow to the defense for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Sure.
45 still painted in the market. You can find that. Plenty of spots where you shop as Steve Fezzik joins us here on Sharp Money. This is, I think, right up your alley, this game, Steve, Miami and L.A., because a lot of the professionals have looked at two teams in the Dolphins and the Chargers as pretty much about equal on a neutral, and yet we see the Chargers get that full three-point respect when anybody who's watched football, especially Charger games over the last few years since the move, whether it was Carson, California, or now SoFi Stadium, would say there is no way possible that the Chargers get a full 3 points for home field advantage. So what gives here on a game where we do see the Chargers getting that 3 point respect?
Might give them a minus one in crowd noise.
Seriously,
in a lot of these games where, like, when they play a team like the Steelers, it's nothing but Steelers. Interesting. I talked to Will Hill about that. No, he prefers the Dolphins. I did the same analysis as him. I had them equal. Home field's worth the one. I'm getting all this value. And then I did a little more research on this game, and I'm not as optimistic. You know what concerns me a little bit? These teams played last year, and the Chargers were horribly injured on defense, and they just shut down Tua despite it and won 23-17. So, I mean, it's one data point, one prior. I don't want to overreact to that. But I'm a little less optimistic based upon what I read and the fact, you know, Chargers had a lot of injuries last year. There are some guys that I know that are extremely, that I respect, extremely high, that are saying you missed the boat here. The Chargers are indeed better than Miami by a couple points, Fez.
It's going to be a good game. I'll tell you what, I can't touch this game, but for me, this is going to be arguably maybe the best game of the weekend to watch.
Yeah, it's one of those. I'm not touching it simply because this is as healthy as I can ever remember the Chargers being in a single week. I mean, there's really no injury issues whatsoever, which, yeah. I mean, how often have we ever said that?
We're still 48 hours away. Okay. Chargers, you never know.
Granted, I know.
Derwin James is limping off the field.
No, he's stepping off the bus. He turned his ankle. Looks like he's going to be out.
It's not my fault, all right, if anything happens here. Outside of the games we just touched on, the other one, you know, I've seen various opinion and kind of dueling opinion in the movement between the Raiders and Broncos here. Some really respected guys love Denver and bet that up to five earlier in the summer. What gives in your mind on that move? Now we're down to 3.5 market wide.
Another movie, what is it? Disclosure with Michael Douglas. Another movie where it's like, well, what happened? Why isn't this working? You know, with this line move on Denver. Well, the specifications got changed. You know, someone went ahead and changed the air filters on this product. What changed? Well, Denver's great week one and week two at home. All right, and part of that's teams aren't in game shape, and then they go to Denver and they get blasted. Oftentimes, actually, they don't get blasted. They wear out and they lose close games. So Denver, over like the past 20 years, it's been a solid spot, not so much against the spread, but straight up. So Denver was like 2, and then they were 3, and then they were 4, and then a very well-respected, I'll say Right Angle Sports released Denver, -4, and it flew all the way up to 5. Nothing but respected sharp money in Denver, and then Jerry Jeudy went out and went down 3 minutes after that release. And all of a sudden, you're looking, wait a minute, Patrick got hurt already for Denver. And the Raiders, no, I make the case, other than the Steelers, no team had as good a preseason as the Raiders did. Yeah. A lot of that was their backup quarterback playing so well. But with optimism about the Raiders and cluster injuries now at wide receiver, you know, I think the Raiders are the right side. I think it's going to be a very close game. And the Raiders seem like they've had distraction after distraction the last few years with Gruden and with off-field issues. And finally, they can play undistracted. It should be a field goal game. I'd look Raiders.
Of course, Chandler Jones had other ideas about that over the last couple of days. But alas, a line that, based on where it's trending, could easily get back down to 3.
I agree with that.
Steve Fezzik, hey, this was a blast. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We really appreciate it.
Go Browns. Best bet Browns.
There we go. All right. Follow him at Fezzik Sports on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, as we're continuing here. Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. More NFL Week 1 slate. We hammer it home when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving you a can't-miss offer for Week 1. This week, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5 on any NFL game. Download now and use code SHARP to sign up. New customers can take home $200 in bonus bets instantly just for betting $5. That is code SHARP only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. A big thanks to professional handicapper bettor Steve Fezzik for joining us for the last 45 minutes here on Sharp Money. Mike Somich, now one of our own hosts, does the handle on Weekends with Matt Brown. Mike will join us in about 15 minutes talking college and NFL, week two in college, week one in the National Football League. We have a lot of games still to discuss, though, Amal, because we've got 15 games remaining on the week one slate. A lot of movement back and forth, right around key numbers especially. Let's go to a team you and I discussed a lot this summer, the New Orleans Saints. Yeah. Three-point favorites pretty much painted against the Tennessee Titans, but the juice has been shifting a lot on that as we get ready for the Titans and Saints. Very interesting inter-conference matchup. We'll start with Mike Vrabel looking to break down this spot. And what do we get out of a Titans team that has been very good with Vrabel as a dog in the past? They're trying to do it again, opening the season in New Orleans.
Well, I think probably with a veteran quarterback, there's probably going to be some concepts that, you know, Derek really likes or that he's really comfortable with. But, you know, also I think that there's an element to what the Saints have done and will do. But I would imagine that there's some things that Derek's liked through his career that he would want to put in there.
And we look at it so far now, Amal, and this is a game, I looked at my own ratings. I feel like 3 is totally the right number. But you then think about the coaching mismatch, perception-wise, Dennis Allen for New Orleans, Mike Vrabel for Tennessee. You think about where some of the betting splits are at. Dustin Points is out, almost three-quarters of the handle on Tennessee, about half the bet so far on the Titans coming into this game. Now that there's no hooks available, now that we're at 3, how would you tackle this one, given where we're at with both teams?
Well, I tell you what, with this number, I'd stay away from this game. I think it's a tough game. I think I'm not a big fan of this Tennessee team, but you mentioned a coaching advantage here. Tannehill, experienced quarterback. Derrick Henry, a great running back. For my money, the best running back in football, with all due respect towards Nick Chubb and Christian McCaffrey. But the question is, can the perimeter be effective for this team, the skill position? DeAndre Hopkins, Treylon Burks, those guys are going to be crucial. On the flip side, New Orleans' strength is the defense. No defense in the National Football League was better than those guys over the last 10 games of the regular season, Ben. That's going to be key. And then how does Carr take advantage of having a healthy receiving core this year? You know, Michael Thomas going to be back in the mix. This team's got an opportunity. No Alvin Kamara in this particular spot, which is a big blow to the Saints team. But this is still a team that's very dangerous, very effective, or potentially effective on the offensive side of the ball. But I got to wait and see approach here with New Orleans. I'm not enamored with them sure. Right now.
Look, a lot of intangible things. You talk about coaching that would lead me to want to bet Tennessee. As we welcome Dustin back to the show. Welcome back, by the way. Dustin back on with us. It's so hard for me to bet a completely battered and a disheveled offensive line in week one on the road in a tough place to play. It's why it's a stay away for me.
Yeah, I'm higher on the Saints than the Titans this year, but it's not because I think the Saints are better than the Titans this year. I just like the Saints situation in that division. That's the only reason why I'm higher on them. I don't think the Titans have a lot of weapons, and I do not want to bet against Mike Vrabel. This is a complete stay away, but it's a game that is apparently getting a lot of action on the dog, getting a lot of action on Tennessee. I think the sharp people really like Tennessee. They think they're undervalued in that AFC South this year. I don't see it, I also think Mike Vrabel's knows more about football than I do, so maybe he might be better, but
sure, yeah.
They're a team later in the year I plan on fading because I don't see the weapons for them making sense. And then for New Orleans, they have a new quarterback, and Dennis Allen is still a head coach in the NFL, and I still don't understand how that's a possibility in 2023.
Sure. Look, a lot of the books, too, market-wide, whether you're betting in Nevada or rest of country, a lot of those 3s now juice toward Tennessee, and I see one book even down to 2.5, so you kind of wonder if that keeps...
How low does it go before you want to take the Saints?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to Dustin's point, Dennis Allen with the Raiders, 4-12, 4-12, 0-4. With the Saints, 7-10, career record of 15-38. Just to clarify from a winning percentage standpoint, 28% win percentage.
And, doesn't fit today's NFL at all. Like, he is a defensive old-school guy. Like, I don't understand this. And the defense is good. I actually think the offense has a lot of potential if they get things worked out. Derek Carr is one of the most confounding players in the league to me. I think I said it the other day on the show, Ben, you weren't here. I said, I don't think he's as bad as the people who hate him thinks he is, but I also don't think he's as good as the apologists think he is. Like, the truth is somewhere in the middle, But is that good enough for the Saints team in a really bad division? I think so.
Yeah, and look, as a guy who last year, 21st in completion percentage over expectation, plus EPA per play. Guy who's pretty much, he's been mediocre, and granted, that was a career worst year for Carr a season ago, but you have an offensive line that isn't that great to begin with on paper, a running back group without Alvin Kamara at the start of the year, wide receivers who are who have not proven an ability to stay healthy, and Rashid Shaheed is already questionable with a groin injury. So I think there's a lot of questions you can ask on New Orleans. I'm curious what Derek Carr to say, by the way. We've got that sound from Derek Carr as he's set to make his Saints debut at QB.
Yeah, I feel very confident. That is one thing about me. I will never lose confidence, whether it goes really great or doesn't go so great. You know, I always believe in myself and believe what I can do, but we've put a lot of work in since phase one in April and all the way through until now. And I'm very confident, but that doesn't always equal wins. I just want to go out there, compete, play good football, play the type of football I know that I'm capable of, the type of football I've been playing all off season, through training camp and the preseason, and hopefully be able to continue that in the regular season. But it's going to be tough because we got a good matchup this week.
He's a football player, Amal.
Yeah, as a guy who doesn't lack confidence, I don't believe him when he says he's confident. I can tell you right now.
Well, no, because if you were confident, you don't have to say you're confident. You just would be confident.
Well, it's, other thing is the way he's justifying it. Here's the thing with Carr. Anytime there's any pressure in the pocket, there's no quarterback in the National Football League that gets happier feet than him. I mean, by the way, is there any quarterback, what's perceived to be an offsides or something, that throws the ball into the ground more than Carr? I mean, like, he acts like he gets a commission for every time he does it.
Weird things happen with him, right? Like, especially in key moments. It's not that it happens, like, in the second quarter. It's happening late in games. Like, my least favorite thing about him is that it'll be, like, second and six, and for some reason he'll take, or third and six, let's say, but he'll throw the ball 20 yards downfield instead of looking for something easier to complete.
But by the way, in terms of this team right now, you mentioned Dennis Allen. Here's one of the reasons why I would have never hired him as a head coach. This guy was a graduate assistant at Texas A&M where he played under R.C. Slocum for 4 years. I've never seen a guy that was a graduate assistant for 4 years.
4 years? Did he get 2 degrees?
I don't know. He got every degree that they had at A&M. But my point is, how does it, as Dustin alluded to, this is such a coaching mismatch. This might be one of the worst coaching mismatches all season long.
Also, there's a lot of players on that defense. You probably don't need the head coach to be a DC.
Yes.
You would need an offensive guy to maximize most, especially when you have so much of your cap tied up in a guy like Taysom Hill.
That's also. I thought they had two. I thought there were like literally 2 degrees on offer at Texas A&M, the A and the M part. But apparently they're. I don't know. Apparently they're.
The third one is to join the cult.
What about in this division? A similar line: the Panthers and the Falcons, 3.5 for Carolina. But there's no DJ Chark, questionable tag for Adam Thielen, who didn't practice yesterday. Amal and I do not like Desmond Ridder. Would love to hear how you feel about him, Ben. But this is a situation where if I was betting it, I might actually lay the 3.5, even though I think Desmond Ridder is awful.
Hey, by the way, stop leading the witness.
that's a great way to phrase it. It's fun. I'm glad you brought this game up. This is a game, it seems like there are one or two every year where the entire betting community is on one side of a team, pro, and one side on a team against, and they happen to meet up, and this is what we're seeing, Carolina and Atlanta. They're every ember in my body, Amal. I want to fade this Atlanta team week one in a really tight, on-paper divisional matchup, take Carolina, but because of the O-line issues in preseason, Frank Reich 0-4-1 straight up as a head coach in week one games, and a rookie quarterback. Well, you have a stat, Dustin, on the number one overall quarterbacks, how they do. It's horrific in their debuts, especially on the road. I just can't get there. Every ember in my body, though, wants to take Carolina plus 3.5. I just can't get there because I feel like the power rating is way too high on this Atlanta team.
Well, I don't disagree with you there, but I think overall the talent on offense is far superior to what you see in Carolina. Dustin had a great stat this week. First overall draft picks at quarterback have really, really struggled. Straight up, there's one win in the last 20 years. That was Derek Carr when he started in the game against the Houston Texans on Sunday Night Football Dallas Cowboys. Other than that, everybody's got a bagel. Now, Kyler Murray did have a tie 27-27 a couple of years ago. If you remove those two out of the equation, it's dead nut losers on the first overall pick at quarterback.
Yeah, so that was for number one overall picks. Yeah. And then another one, number one picks overall, who start at quarterback in their first career start, 4-21-1 straight up, 7-19 ATS.
Not great. Not great. Well, and look, but at the same time, though, Carolina is a team built on its run defense and its physicality in the front seven. That is the one thing Atlanta does really, really well. So I look at the specific matchup when these two teams face off, and I feel like Carolina is pretty well equipped to stop what Atlanta wants to do extremely efficiently. Now, can Carolina move the ball on offense? That's a whole other question mark. I think it's a big reason why we're seeing this under completely come down.
Maybe I missed it, but did you give Dustin's answer to the question? What's your official assessment on Ritter?
Oh, it's ways to go. Ways to go. He's what was the Fran Fraschilla line? He's 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Yeah.
It's not quite there, but there's going to be growing pains.
Congratulations. You definitely have good vision.
And by the way, Congressman, what district are you running in? Come on, give us an answer here, bro.
I said he's not ready.
No, listen, I'm not ready to play in the NFL. I mean, that's an obvious assessment.
Obviously. That's what Ritter's not. All right, Mike Somich, he won't be a politician. He'll join us next with some real takes on Sharp Money.